Hi, Steve. Hi, guys. Welcome to the show. It's Bill and Wendy. We're thrilled that you're listening. Hope you enjoyed your holiday weekend. Wendy, did you enjoy your holiday weekend?
I had a lovely holiday weekend.
Isn't it nice?
Did you barbecue?
Of course. It's a law. Even if you don't want to barbecue, you have to barbecue on this weekend.
What'd you barbecue?
A little bit of everything. Still had some Omaha steaks left.
Oh.
So finished those off. My dad brought some ribs over. Some various different kinds of ribs.
Like St. Louis style,
yes,
baby back,
yeah,
beef.
An assortment of ribs, something for everybody.
Did he go to Ribs R Us and purchase those?
Yes. Yes, he did. Steve?
Well, you know, I worked yesterday.
I know you did.
And I was happy to do it. I mean, I chose to work. I needed to build up some vacation time.
Yeah.
But it's really weird to not live a holiday during a holiday.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm working, which is no big deal. I get home about 2:30, and, you know, I start doing, staining my deck, actually, inside my porch. But other people next to me are having parties, and I kind of forgot. It's like, oh, yeah.
Right.
It's Labor Day.
When you work on a holiday, it nullifies the holiday.
Sort of, but then you see other people, and you just kind of like, what are they doing? Oh, yeah, right. It's
right.
This is when people barbecue.
Right.
So did you barbecue?
No.
Steve.
I was doing jobs around the house, planting bushes and stuff.
Oh, all right.
We just did bratwurst. I love a good bratwurst.
Quick and easy and delicious.
Yeah, I was going to do ribs, but I didn't feel like putting all the work into it.
It's so strange because we did a big barbecue, a family barbecue, on the last day of May. And then that's the beginning of summer. And then yesterday was the end of summer. And in my head, it's like a 2-week span from the beginning of summer to the end of summer. I know it was 3 months.
It felt like two weeks.
But it just whizzed past so fast.
It did. And we had a family reunion in La Porte, Indiana,
which
La Porte means...
The port.
Yes.
It does, right? It's French
it
for
is.
The port.
But when you... I have first cousins that live in Indiana, mm-hmm. and we went there. And I know Indiana gets a bad rap. And it's on all the lists of unattractive places. La Porte is beautiful. There's this giant lake there.
Wendy, it's the home of the La Porte Slicers.
Is that a deli team?
Yep. Yep.
I can get a pound of ham razor thin quicker than you.
Yep. They're known for their razor fast deli.
It was beautiful.
Was it beautiful?
It was beautiful.
Yeah. Oh.
It was hilly.
I would not have guessed that would have been the word to describe La Porte, Indiana, but beautiful's the word.
It was very nice. So we did a family reunion.
Are you picking up steaks? Are you heading out there? I don't mean picking up steaks like, more grilling. I mean, are you going to move there?
No. No. It would be too long of a commute here.
Right. Plus, once you live there, where could you vacation? Because it's so beautiful there, you wouldn't want to go to Hawaii or anything.
You're a snob.
No, I credit you for finding the most beautiful part of La Porte, Indiana. That's not the easiest thing in the world to do, but you pulled it off.
It was very
lovely.
That's
excellent. That's excellent. All right. Some sad news from over the weekend. I know you wanted to talk about this. On Friday, we found out after the show. Well, you weren't working Friday, but we all found out that Valerie Harper had passed away, and that's a huge loss. That was a great lady.
She was utterly amazing, and I know you've interviewed her. I'm pretty sure we did it together. If not, I know I did at the Loop at night, mm-hmm. and I have an autographed picture of her, and she was just so genuine.
Such a nice lady. A couple things about her. Thing number one. One time I had her on at another station, you were not part of this, and she and I started talking about movies. And she goes, wow, we have the same taste in movies. And I said, yeah, we have very similar taste. So she hands me an index card. She slides me an index card and she goes, write down 5 or 6 movies that you think I should see. And I go, really? And she goes, yeah, just write down whatever you think I should see. So I did. I wrote down a bunch of titles and I gave it to her. I didn't see her for 3.5 or 4 years, and she came back in. I didn't even think she'd remember me. She comes in, she gives me a hug. She goes, I just want to tell you, 4 out of the 5 movies on that list were fantastic, and the other one I didn't understand. I go, you saw those movies? She goes, yeah, I loved them.
That's amazing.
That's a great story.
4 years later, right?
What was the one she didn't like?
I want to know your list of five.
Me too.
I can't remember what they were because so much time had passed, but I just give her credit for remembering me and that I wrote that list out for her.
That's where she went above and beyond the call of duty as a celebrity.
Yeah.
She made you feel special.
Yeah. I told her on her first appearance, I said, America fell in love with Mary Tyler Moore. There was no two ways around it. We loved Mary Tyler Moore. I said, but there was a percentage of us that really had a thing for Rhoda.
I was a Rhoda girl.
Yeah.
She had moxie, Bill. She had total moxie, and boy, she knew her way around a headscarf. Didn't she?
She owned it.
It looked so cool. I was born in the Bronx, New York.
Right.
I mean, I loved the spinoff Rhoda show, maybe more than Mary Tyler Moore.
She did a Jewish New Yorker better than anybody, and it's really high kudos to her because she's not Jewish.
Or from New York?
From New York,
okay.
But not Jewish.
Yeah. She was pretty amazing and utterly beautiful.
Insanely. Yeah, it was very, very sad. So I have to say, every time I was lucky enough to interview her three different times, and each of those times was so amazing because when she left, you just go, I hoped she'd be nice, and she so exceeded being nice. You know, she was so personable. Loved to talk. You know how a lot of stars are, whatever made them famous, they don't want to talk about it. She was just the opposite. She could have told Mary Tyler Moore stories all day long.
She was amazing. We almost lost someone else, and thankfully for you, we didn't. Kevin Hart in a bad accident.
Do you know how many texts I received yesterday from people saying, I hope you're happy?
I held back.
I don't want anyone to be in a car accident.
But I have to say, and this is just me, and I'm typically not a conspiracy theorist.
You think I rigged his car?
No, but there are just some interesting things. When he purchased that 70
the
whatever,
Barracuda?
Yes.
Yeah.
He posted on Instagram, a new addition to the family. This is mine for my 40th birthday. But someone else was driving it.
Why would you let someone else drive your prized possession?
Right. And then I had read too that he had got after the accident, he left the scene and went back to his house. I feel like there's some cover up here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
usually I make fun of your conspiracy theories, but as soon as I heard that that was his prized possession, but he was in the car, but somebody else was driving the car, I go, you don't do that with your prized possession.
Does Jay Leno let other people drive his babies?
I don't think he does.
I don't either.
I don't think he does. I think this time you're right. I really do. All right, we'll take a break.
We have to do an EAS test, and could we be getting hurricane weather here? That's impossible, right? Because it was so windy this morning.
Well, it happens.
It's the aftermath.
But not now, no.
It's not the direct hurricane itself, but it's the residuals of the hurricane.
All right, because it was super windy this morning, and our patio umbrella should be put down, Jim, if you're listening, because it's going to end up in the neighbor's yard.
Oh, that's
always sad when
I hate that.
Can't you just put it on an umbrella farm somewhere in upstate Illinois?
is it in pain?
No, but speaking of that, and we do have some time to kill because we need to do an EAS test, Kona got another rabbit, and this was a baby, and I went out with the shovel to take care of it. And I saw it run away. So he didn't kill it, A. And two, it was able to move, and it was...
Did you and Jimmy move to Pet Cemetery, Illinois, since we last spoke?
But I had to take Kona to the vet last week, and I asked Dr. Gibbs, listen, you know, Kona got a rabbit and didn't finish it off, and I feel guilty. What do I do? If I bring it in here, will you put it down?
Yeah.
And he looked at me, and I said, I'll pay for it.
Oh.
I just don't... And he goes, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah.
But then it always happens on a Sunday afternoon after 5. So.
What's the bunny picnic time?
But this one got away.
That's a happier ending than last week.
I was looking at it, and I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to let this poor thing suffer. And I went back with the shovel, and I was going to do it.
You would have killed a healthy bunny.
Well, that's why I waited a little bit
to
make sure.
Did it limp away?
Nope.
Because oh, good.
So,
what is the correct amount of time to wait before taking the shovel to the rabbit?
As long as time as it takes to eat a bratwurst.
Yeah,
We need Kona at our house. We have a skunk now that comes out every night at about 6 or 6:30.
Same, and you see it?
Yeah, comes out the backyard. My
They're
Sharon
fearless.
Posted it on her Instagram. And, you know, just kind of hangs out for a while. They're fearless because they can't see.
Oh, is that what it is?
Dumb as rocks. Yeah.
Because they don't move quickly, they just kind of very casually stroll around. They're in no hurry to get out of your way.
Oh, the other night I threw a rock at it, and
Steve.
What?
They can't see, so you're throwing a rock.
You want to establish the fact that
it's a
stay
skunk.
Away from,
I wanted to. Yeah. I'm not going to apologize for. Anyway, I missed it by 20 feet. I mean, trust me, you're fine. I wasn't going to hit it, but I thought I'd scare it.
Yeah,
and it, you know, popped up, looked in the direction where the rock landed, and then went right back down to its business.
We have ground squirrels, too. I swear I live in Brookfield Zoo.
What is the difference between a squirrel and a ground squirrel?
A ground squirrel, almost, it's like a chipmunk. It's the Brookfield Zoo has 13 lined ground squirrels, and if you did count them, there would be 13 lines on them.
Wow.
But a ground squirrel and a chipmunk, very similar. Not sure if they're the same.
You know,
and opossums.
When I was a kid, I never saw a chipmunk once when I was a kid, and now I see them all day, every day in the summer. They're everywhere. What changed in the world of chipmunks that I would go from never seeing one ever to they're always there?
I think we stopped killing animals.
Is that what it is?
I mean, I used to never saw. I lived in farm country. I saw a raccoon maybe once or twice in my life.
But now?
Never saw deer.
Yeah.
Only occasionally saw an opossum. And now they're everywhere.
They're all over the place.
Get your number two pencils ready because we are about to embark on our emergency alert system test for the month. And we need to know what is happening in case of weather emergencies and other emergencies. So pencils ready and do not cheat off your partner. Well, it's back to school. Notice the traffic was up and at it today.
By quite a bit.
Yeah.
It took me an extra 25 minutes to get to work today, and I couldn't figure out if it was because school was back or because of the weather.
Both.
Or a combination. It's got to be a combination, right?
Something happens when it rains around here. The cars multiply. It really seems
that
way.
There's more traffic when it's raining.
Yeah,
right.
I know. I guess people don't take the train then, maybe. I don't know. It's just when it's snowy, it's just if the roads are bad, it takes you longer. But rain shouldn't slow you down.
I'm
like
not
that.
Sure why it does. It always seems to. But worst case scenario, you or your car or both will get wet. It's not that different.
Right.
Right.
And I know it's after Labor Day, and I know you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day, but it's still going to be in the 80s, so I think we should extend that. I'm not wearing white today because I typically don't wear white.
I don't think...
Pants.
I guess you've worn white pants. I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen you come in wearing white.
I don't typically wear white on top because it just gets dirty too quickly. I wear makeup. Sometimes you get makeup on it. I walk around eating spaghetti and meatballs, and that would
more
be a problem.
Than not, right.
White pants I actually have. I kind of forgot I have them, and now I thought about it, and I'm going to wear them maybe this week.
Yeah, get one or two more blasts in.
But, I mean, technically, you're not supposed to do it.
I don't know. The rules have changed. There was a time where, you're right, Labor Day was the cutoff from anything. But I have always seen people wearing white afterwards, and I don't think any differently of them.
I used to work with a guy who had white leather shoes, and he would wear them every, like, Friday before Labor Day. That's the last time.
Just to get it out of his system?
Yeah.
I love that.
Was that called the Pat Boone rule for a while? It was, wasn't it?
He didn't invent that. Wearing white?
Yeah, somebody always used to call, if you'd ever wear white shoes, somebody would go, ah, look who's breaking the Pat Boone rule. Evidently, at some point, Pat Boone was known for his white shoes.
I could see that.
But even Pat Boone knew Labor Day was the cutoff.
How do you continue your fall without seeing the telethon? I was thinking of you yesterday.
It's not easy.
Because that was your rite of passage.
That
into...
was such a staple for most of my life, was watching Jerry Lewis. Now, I never was able to pull off. The common belief is that he did a 24-hour telethon, and more times than not, it was 22 hours. I don't know why in our heads it was a 24, but it was normally a 22. Although,
who would know that
the extra
other than
2 hours?
The number of people bothered by that? One.
Just me.
Was he there the whole time?
No. Uh-uh.
Because I would think he'd
would
get very loopy.
He would take a couple
loopy.
Of breaks. Oh, you got a lot of that, Wendy. There was plenty of loopiness to be had. But that was such an important part of my, not just Labor Day, but my whole summer into fall. And now it just doesn't exist.
Okay, I could do you one better. So when they would break away to the local phone banks?
Yes.
I used to dream that one day I'd be one of those people.
Oh, really?
Really?
Oh, maybe one day.
So would you be hosting that
achieved.
In your dream or
no,
what?
No, I'd just be...
At the phone bank?
I'd be at the phones and, you know, the host would come and say, oh, here's Steve Bertrand.
Did you ever do the Channel 11 one?
No, I've never been asked to answer a phone.
We could probably get you in.
I think I'm past that dream.
It would be fun. I wanted to be Judy, the Time Life operator. She was so nice.
Those are high dreams you guys had.
Oh, Mr. Well, 22 Hour.
See, we like to talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we like talking on the phone.
Right.
That'd be a perfect job.
Everything's there for you. But how does muscular dystrophy raise its money now? Like in the old days, that's where their money came from, was the Labor Day telethon. What are they doing now to make up that money?
I think they still have the carnivals.
Oh, maybe.
No, I don't think they do.
Maybe.
I threw a muscular dystrophy carnival when
How
I was a
kid. Yours? Because mine sucked.
With BJ and the Dragon. I think right. I had one that was really good, and then I pestered my parents for years and had a weak one after that.
I had one, and it was weak. I don't even think anyone came.
For people who don't know, you would send away, and you would get a kit. They would send you a kit, and then you'd send them the proceeds, right?
And really, the kit was just like a, not even a poster. It was a piece of typing paper with...
It was suggestions of carnival games you could play.
Yeah. No one came to mine.
Oh. It's horrible. It's terrible. All right, we'll take a break, some news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us during the show, if you want to make a comment or you have a question, 312-981-7200 is both the phone line and the text line. There's a story out of Fort Smith, Arkansas that is incredibly disturbing. And then there's also a side story that the story has brought on. Here's what it is. There's a lady named Deborah Stevens who worked as a newspaper delivery person for years and years and years. And there was flooding in her area in Arkansas. So when she was delivering papers last week in her car, the floodwaters rose into the car and she made a call to 911. I was talking to Steve today. There's audio of this. The 911 tapes have been released. And they're harrowing. They're very, very hard to listen to, especially when you know the outcome of what took place, which is this woman lost her life
in the flood.
But the 911 dispatcher is so rude to her, to the woman who made the call. I'll get into specifics over what she said. It's unbelievable what she said to this woman who was about to die. But the thing is, we were trying to figure out whether playing the audio was a good idea or a bad idea. And this has come up on the show and on the station before. In a way, you're taking advantage of a situation, a horrible situation. And I don't want to do that. It does make you realize how grave the situation is when you hear this woman just pleading with this woman to get her help fast. And she starts praying. But then when you realize that this is this woman's last few minutes on earth, it almost feels like you're exploiting her. So we're not going to play the tape. You can find it online if you want it. You can listen to it, but it's very, very hard to listen to.
I agree with your decision, and especially for the family members, you don't want to have this. They shouldn't be released. I'm sorry.
I think they should be released because it is freedom of information.
I know.
And it really does help you.
But do we need to know it?
Well, sometimes we do.
Yes. Sometimes you do. And here's why you need to know it in this situation. I'll go through the paces of what was said in the phone conversation, but you almost need to hear it to understand how serious it all is. I mean, this woman ended up losing her life partially because the dispatcher wasn't really doing her job. And by the way, it was her last day, not because she got fired from the job, because she had put in her notice that this was going to be her last day. So then you enter into the idea that maybe she just didn't care anymore. She knew this was her last day.
You can't not care right. When you're a 911 operator.
I agree with you. I totally agree. Deborah Stevens was working her normal newspaper delivery route in Fort Smith in Arkansas when rising waters began to overtake her SUV. The final desperate 911 call of the 47-year-old woman who delivered the Southwest Times record to front doors came at 4:38 in the morning on August the 24th. It was a panicked 22-minute plea to help with a dispatcher that the Fort Smith Police Department admitted sounded, and I quote, calloused and uncaring at times.
In 22 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I have an emergency, a severe emergency, Deborah Stevens told a female dispatcher. I can't get out and I'm scared to death, ma'am. Can you please help me? A terrified Stevens told the dispatcher over and over that she was going to die in the rapidly rising water. She wept and asked when help would arrive. She didn't know how to swim, she said. She had trouble describing her location, but she didn't want to die, she said. You're not going to die, the dispatcher said in an audio released by police this week. I don't know why you're freaking out. You freaking out is doing nothing but losing your oxygen in there, so calm down. Stephen said that water was pouring into her car. It would soon ruin her new phone. Do you really care about your brand new phone? Asked the dispatcher, who happened to be working her final shift that morning. You're over there crying for your life. Who cares about your phone?
Because that's the lifeline to the 911 operator.
I know.
My God.
Steven said she didn't see the water on the road. She came up on it suddenly. The water was getting as high as her chest, she said. She could see people in the distance looking at her. They're probably laughing, she said. Ma'am, I'm sorry, Stevens cried out. Stevens needed to throw up, she said at one point. Well, you're in water, so you can throw up, the dispatcher said. It's not going to matter. Crying uncontrollably, Stevens asked the woman on the line to pray with her. You go ahead and start off your prayer, said the 911 operator. Please help, get me out of this water, dear father, Stevens said. Again, she apologized. She didn't mean to be rude, but she was afraid. This will teach you next time that you shouldn't drive in water, the dispatcher told her.
Oh, my God.
Stevens insisted she didn't see the floodwaters. She worked her paper route for 21 years and had never experienced anything like this. I don't know how you didn't see it. You had to go right over it. The water just didn't appear, said the dispatcher. About 15 minutes into the recording, the dispatcher is heard taking other phone calls. Police said that many stranded residents were calling that morning. Stevens wept on the phone line. The dispatcher tried to describe to firefighters the stranded woman's location. I'm on the phone with her, she said, but she's freaking out. Now, 18 minutes into the phone call, the dispatcher was asking a firefighter whether he could see Stevens' SUV. Negative, he said, and there was confusion about her location. Miss Debbie, you're going to have to shut up, the dispatcher said. Can you just honk your horn? My horn is dead, Stevens said. Everything is dead. The water was rising above the door of her SUV, Stephen said. Oh, Lord, help me, she cried. Rescuers were trying to find her, the operator told her. Oh, my God, my car is starting to move, Stevens cried. Okay, listen to me. I know, the dispatcher said, and I'm trying to get you help. I know that you're scared. Just hold on for me because I've got to take some other calls. Stevens screamed. She couldn't breathe. I'm on the phone with her right now, the dispatcher said to a rescuer, and she's legit freaking out. I'm going to die, Stevens called out. Miss Debbie, you're breathing just fine because you are screaming at me, so calm down. I know you're scared. Hold on for me. Stevens is then not hurt again. Miss Debbie? Miss Debbie, the dispatcher said. Oh, my God, she sounds like she's under the water. The call ended at 5 a.m. Rescuers reached Stevens' SUV 58 minutes later. They tried unsuccessfully to revive her.
That is unacceptable, and someone has texted that dispatcher should be charged with manslaughter.
And that's why you have these have to be public access, yeah. Wendy, because we would not know this.
Yeah. But police can hear it. Why does the general public have to hear it?
Well, I didn't mean to derail you there, but the media should show a little more character in what they do play and they don't play. I don't like playing 911 tapes ever. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't become part of the public record.
We've had a couple of instances on the show where I know that the access to the tape is there, and I always feel strange playing it because I feel ghoulish, you know? But I'm not doing this justice. When you hear this woman just screaming out for help, realizing she's about to die and the dispatcher being so cold-hearted to her, and the dispatcher, by the way, has been defended by her bosses or former bosses.
How?
Just saying that what she did, that she didn't really break any rules. And I guess to some extent you can agree with that maybe she didn't break any rules, but
moral rules she sure did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is disgusting. I'm sorry.
Horrible. Horrible.
I'm anxious to see what happens because this dispatcher should have some charges.
Well, here's a quick question that I thought about immediately because I knew going in and I told you, she had already announced that was going to be her last day on the job. So what if it wasn't going to be her last day? Would she be suspended? Would she be fired? Would she be fined?
Not if the boss is saying everything she did was appropriate.
They were being very defensive of her. They really were being very defensive of her.
Shame on that whole department.
Yeah. I don't get it. I mean, at some point you have to realize that this was handled horribly wrong. So I understand trying to defend one of your own, but in a case like this, where the tape is very readily available and you can hear the way it played out.
And that's when you teach your other employees, this is an example of what not to do.
Right.
We can do better than this.
Right. Absolutely.
That is very upsetting
Horrible.
To me.
All right. We'll take a break. It is Tech Tuesday, so Roger Cheng will join us from CNET. We'll find out what's going on in the world of technology. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bill, it's a Tech Tuesday. And we are going to talk to Roger Chang, who is executive editor and head of CNET News. Roger, how are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Facebook is doing something that might help people's mental health. I believe they're following suit. Instagram did this. Why don't you explain?
Yes. So this is following an experiment that Instagram, which they also own, tinkered with a few months ago, basically looking at hiding likes on your newsfeed posts, specifically hiding the number of likes you get. And the idea here is that it relieves the pressure of having you, obsess over how many likes that post receives. And generally, I mean, this sort of goes back to the broader idea of kind of making Facebook and Instagram, places that you are less addicted to, and sort of address some of the issues that or concerns that folks have kind of laid upon these social networks, that they're designed to be addictive.
So we know Facebook is basically an online popularity contest, Roger, and it's always weird to me when somebody posts something like, sadly, my grandfather has passed away, and then there's a couple dozen likes, and people, that's their way of saying, I feel sorry for you.
Then put the sad face.
I guess so. But I do give them credit for realizing that not everything in the world is either something that you like or don't like. I guess that's progress in a weird way, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And this is less about, how you express yourself and how you want folks to react to your post. And it's more about really by removing the number of likes, removing the indication of how popular the post is, it kind of relieves the pressure on you, like having a successful post, right? There are folks out there, who do obsess with that, right? Making sure they have the right photo and making sure they have the clever comment and really kind of looking over how many likes they get for whatever post they put. So removing that number definitely is helpful from a psychological perspective.
Facebook should be worried about that video that keeps going to your message inbox, your direct message that says you are in this video. And then if you click on it, it gets all of your contacts, and that thing just keeps going and going and going. I have gotten probably 30 of them.
And you're not in any of those 30 videos, Wendy?
Shut up. I'm in different ones. But I didn't, obviously you open your messenger to look at it, but I did not ever click on the link. But that thing, come on, that can't be stopped by now. It's been happening for the last month or so.
Yeah. It's been going around. It's one of those things that, again, because Facebook is such a huge network, even those problems that you think are massive and going around everywhere probably is a blip for this site because, it's got billions of users.
Yeah, I guess that is so annoying. Don't open it. You're not in the video. I checked.
Can I still like that video if I want to?
Sure.
Or is it too late?
If you want.
Nah.
All right. So this is about the time that we start talking Apple this, Apple that, iPhone. I have a 6S, and I'm cool with keeping it. I have one kid who's got a 6S, and his screen has been broken for so long. I don't know. Do we need the iPhone 11?
Do we need it? That's a great question. It really is different depending on who you are. I think if you're happy with your phone, regardless of what model it is, I think it's not necessarily worth upgrading, especially given that the prices for these phones are just getting higher, right? You're looking at, $1,000+ for one of these devices. The question about whether or not you want to upgrade, it used to be a bit of a no-brainer after 2 years. Even after 1 year, more aggressive folks would upgrade. But given the price hikes on these devices, it's really no longer just an instant upgrade. You really have to debate whether or not this is worth the investment.
And it's so funny because, in your bill, it'll go, hey, you're ready for an upgrade. So you're right. In the old days, you would just say, okay, well, I'm going to get a new phone.
Right.
Now, these phones, honestly, are so great. I can't imagine there are so many more features for it.
Yeah, and look, we're looking at the rumors that have surfaced for the next wave of iPhones. I mean, slightly better camera, faster processor, and really the same kinds of additional bells and whistles that we've seen the last couple of years. The phones won't change dramatically over this, last year's model. So, if you bought one last year, if you bought one the year before, chances are you probably don't need the upgrade. Like you said, these phones are powerful enough and have enough features that you really are fine with the existing device. But you know, if you've got an older phone and it's starting to slow and it's starting to show its age a little bit, you know, it might be worth the upgrade. But, you know, given the price, it's definitely something you want to put some heavy thought into.
It's so funny how people think when they get that notice, ooh, you've been, it's time for an upgrade. People are like, oh, I'm so special. But it's just the company's way of saying we want to sell you more things.
And get on a payment plan for longer.
It's no high exalted honor.
Somebody has just texted us, 630, iPhones are crap, get a Samsung. Well, now there's a new Samsung that's coming out. Bill, you might like this. You can fold it up and put it into a square and put it into your pocket. Tell us about this, Roger.
Yeah, so this is reportedly the follow-up version of their delayed Galaxy Fold. Now, the Galaxy Fold, the phone that you know, kind of it looks like a book, it folds inwards. That is actually expected to launch later this week. And Samsung's really looking to see how well that does before they offer a follow-up phone. But currently they have in the works a phone that has a 6.7-inch display, but instead of folding like a book, it kind of folds inwards in half and then turns into a compact square. So the idea that you've got this tiny little device you can fold, like the old flip phones, except, you know, the phone uses a foldable display, so it's a continuous display once it folds out.
Remember that thing you used to fold paper in and you'd pick a color and a number?
And then you are stupid at the end of it?
Right. Yeah. We can do that with the new Samsung phone.
That'll be great.
What else?
That's exactly what you want to spend your $2,000 on.
Roger Chang, executive editor and head of CNET News. Any other stories that you're working on over at CNET? I love going there, CNET.com. They have reviews on everything, and it's not just tech stuff. Sometimes it's appliances, automobiles, it's everything. Anything else you're working on over there, Roger?
Yeah, check out the site right now. We've got a great explainer on Wi-Fi 6. It's the next generation of Wi-Fi and why it's so much better and why you need to get on it.
Wi-Fi 6, right?
It's next generation of Wi-Fi. Basically, your Wi-Fi, but like double the range, triple the speed, and just generally better.
Yes, the headline, Wi-Fi is barely here, but Wi-Fi 7 is already on the way, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
We just can't keep up. We appreciate you talking to us, Roger, and have a great week.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Roger.
Executive editor and head of CNET News.
Shouldn't the guy who works for CNET have a better phone? Shouldn't he? He should, right?
I agree with you.
His phone's a little blurry.
A little bit.
Yeah.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune will join us at 11:15. He does every month. He does the tweets of the month, and then we didn't have him on yesterday because of the holiday. So we'll make good on that. That'll happen in about 10 minutes or so.
I really like those.
Ah, it's fun.
It is
fun. It's just fun. Wendy, let's play What If for just a second. What if one of your sons was invited to a birthday party, and in addition to the gift that he would give the birthday boy or the birthday girl, the parents also asked that you pony up some money for the cost of the birthday party? How would you feel about this?
I would say we have another event.
An engagement that day?
Yes, and we won't be able to attend.
A mother is being slammed online for asking parents attending her son's 14th birthday party to pay $82 each for the expenses of the party.
That's not how it works.
I don't think it is how it works. I don't think it is. A user on Mumsnet revealed that her teen had been invited to go to a go-karting party for a 14-year-old friend.
That's fun.
But that does sound like a good time. But she was reluctant to send him following the mom's demands. The son is new at school, but he was happy to have been invited to a karting birthday party. Turns out the whole class was invited to the party.
And how many showed? That's what I want to know.
Oh, that's a good question. It doesn't address that in the story.
Because a new kid in the school, you'd feel like it might be worth paying for it just to get your kid to meet some friends. I would give in if it was a new kid in school.
Maybe, but $82 seems a little stiff. They break it down. They explain why the $82. Here's the breakdown. I'll fast forward to that. In the last few weeks since school let out, I've been updated with further texts about the mother of the birthday boy. This is on Mumsnet, asking for deposits. The go-karting costs $23. The remainder of the day costs $36. That's very nonspecific.
What do you mean the remainder of the day?
It doesn't go into detail. I'm thinking...
favors.
Yeah.
You're paying for your own goodie bag.
Yes, you are. And then also $23 for transport. So again, they're nonspecific, but did they rent a bus? I don't know what that means for transport. Usually at a party like this, the mom and several other parents will drive right to wherever the go-karting is, but why is it $23?
She's charging them gas. She has a van, and she's putting them all in the van, and she's charging them. Tolls and gas and mileage and all that.
I always was under the impression that whatever the gift you were giving the birthday person, that was kind of the start and the end of it.
Yeah.
Right? And more times than not, I mean, it's you're not doing this to make money, but you're going to lose money. If you're throwing a birthday party for one of your kids, you're not going to make out like a bandit on this. There's no way. But that's not what the point of it is. It's for he or she to have a good time on their birthday.
Yeah, because when you think about it, it's not super fair because you pay for the party and the kid reaps the benefits.
Right.
So, I mean, already you're out.
You're out, yeah. But you can't. But that can't even enter into it. You're doing it so it's a memorable day in your child's life.
You're not having Fire Fest, you know, where right all of a sudden you're hoping to make a profit. You're right having a party that hopefully right works well.
Right. Now, my guess is, because it says in the story that the whole class was invited, that it was one of those schools that it becomes mandatory that if you're doing something for one, you're doing something for everybody.
At 14, you're past that. That, you can just mail the invitations.
At 14, is that, is it?
14, that's what, is seventh grade?
Do you remember, was it last Valentine's Day or two Valentine's Day ago, we did a story about a school that insisted that if you were going to bring a Valentine for somebody in your class, everybody in your class got one.
Yeah.
So it's become, you know, the world is now, we don't want anyone to feel left out of anything. So if you're doing Valentine's or if you're having a birthday party, that's the way it is. Now, in the past, I remember at my school, they did a thing where they said, if you're doing a birthday party off of school, you can invite whoever you yeah want. You just can't distribute the invitations at school.
I think that we makes had that sense too, that's, yeah.
That's allowable. That's acceptable.
And, I mean, I'm thinking back to when I was in elementary school and you would take some time at the end of January to bring a shoebox in and you'd decorate it and mm-hmm you'd make a little slot in it and that would become your Valentine's Day box.
Mm-hmm.
I remember specifically going to the store and with my mom and getting Valentine's for everyone in the class. Mm-hmm. And back then they were stupid. Right. Now they got, when my kids did it, it was better because it was Lifesavers or something that was candy related.
Yeah.
But in elementary school, I agree with everybody should get a Valentine. It's just, who cares? Even if you don't like the kid, you write your name on it. And you sign your name. Big deal. But at 14 years of age,
at that point, you should be able to make up the decision. So that's probably a sophomore in high school, wouldn't you say? 14?
Well, 16, you're a sophomore because you start driving.
But we couldn't have done like any of the parties I had as a kid in grade school or high school. I don't think we could have accommodated 30 or 32 kids, like my whole class. And then what if you have friends that are not in your homeroom class, but they're in another class? How does that play out?
In elementary school, you're in the same class pretty much with the same people all the time.
Oh, are you? Yeah.
We were. I mean, it was like, you know, when we're in fourth grade,
yeah,
you might...
We would move around. We had some...
Well, I was, you know, when I was in third grade, I went to fourth grade reading. I didn't get double promoted and I wasn't ambidextrous like you.
Well, not everyone's lucky. Sad but true.
So I guess I did go
and... But didn't you have, like, we had three homerooms. Throughout our grade school, we had three homerooms. And then depending on which class was when, I had different kids in my history class or my math class or my science class.
I guess. I don't really remember. I blacked it out.
All of it?
I had fun. I just went to school every day and couldn't wait to play kickball. That was like the highlight of my day is getting outside for gym class.
Yep. And today you are a professional kickball player. So
I am.
It all paid off.
But at 14 years of age, I feel like you can invite whoever the hell you want to your party. And in this day and age of Evite, you can just send out.
It's easier than ever. But how many of those parties, like I remember when I was in grade school, there were parties almost every week. Somebody's birthday was every week. But if it was $82 every time you went to a kid's birthday party,
No one would go. And I mean, that's just, I mean, even when I have my kids' friends over, like we took a couple friends miniature golfing.
Yeah.
I paid for it.
Yeah.
Because I said, hey, come with us.
Right.
I wouldn't say, okay, fork out the money for, you know,
I know,
the jalapeno McChicken at McDonald's. And, you know, you don't do that.
And I have twins, so if this rule was in effect when my daughters were going to, it'd be $160+ every time they went to anything.
You wouldn't let them
be
go.
Bankrupt immediately.
That's unacceptable. And the other option is to start a GoFundMe page to get that.
No,
which I'm shocked we haven't seen more of.
I think that's the wave of the future.
Having a party for my son, and I truly can't afford it. Can you please contribute whatever you have?
Right, right. Wow.
This world is wigging out.
It's official, Wendy. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune will be on with us. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Whiskey and Zorn. Whiskey and Zorn. Sounding his own. Oh, he's reborn.
I like my Zorn with whiskey.
Sure. It's the best way to enjoy some Zorn. Eric Zorn is here. He's usually with us on Mondays, but there was no class yesterday. Not a shot at John Hansen. I just mean we didn't have a show yesterday.
Oh, ouch.
No, I didn't mean it.
And Annabelle Lavelle was
there. Yeah, she was here, too. Eric, I want to bring you into a discussion Wendy and I were just having. There was a story about a woman having a birthday party for her 14-year-old son, and her plan was to charge each of the kids attending the birthday party $82. Have you ever heard of anything quite like that before?
I have never heard of anything like that before. Is that for a gift, or was that just for...
expenses.
She's going to take all the kids go-karting. That costs $23 per kid. She said the remainder of the day, that's party favors, cake, ice cream, that kind of thing, is $36. And then transportation from the house to the go-kart place and back is $23. So it's $82 per child.
Plus a gift.
That's, you know, the expenses that she's running up are pretty considerable. But if you can't throw a party like that and you can't afford it, then you don't throw the party, right? I mean, that would be my that would be my take.
There's less expensive options than a go-karting party, right?
Yes, you could just have people over for ice cream and cake and then just charge them like $8 or something.
Right.
And at 14, you should just have them invite a few of their besties and maybe go to a movie or something, and you could pick up the tab for that.
Yes.
What's the most elaborate party you guys have ever thrown for your kids?
I was just telling Bill off the air, when Michael was probably 5 or 6, we had a Star Wars party in the backyard, and we had Darth Vader stop by, and members, some stormtroopers came by. We did pin the buns on Leia. It was a lot of work. Jimmy Mack did most of it, but that was probably
for people
our...
who don't know, Princess Leia's hair was in buns.
Yeah, so you had to pin the bun on Princess Leia. We still have that. I'll bring it in if you're good, Bill.
That'd be fun. Eric, what was yours?
You know, I remember we rented a gym a couple of times for our kids to have. We rented a gym in our park district. We played basketball one year. We did theater games another year. And it was, you know, maybe a couple $100 total, and I never even occurred to me. Maybe I should be kicking myself that we never bothered to charge people for that. We're in arrears, I guess.
There was a time where, I don't know if this is still fashionable or not, but my daughters would get invited to trampoline-themed birthday parties. There's a couple places north of us that have these indoor trampoline parks.
Fun,
but the accident ratio is much higher than you'd want it to be.
Yeah. And there are those enchanted castles, and we've done those too, and miniature golf and things like that.
There's options.
Chuck E. Cheese.
So did anybody call in to defend this woman and say, parties are expensive, this is how it's done now?
Not one text.
Every text is the opposite. Like, tell that lady it's immoral to charge for birthday parties, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, if you can't afford it, then, you know, scale down your plans. You just have people over and you make a homemade cake and you could...
Yep.
I don't know. I hope that's not the direction things are going.
But. Eric, people know, in addition to being a columnist, you're also a junior party planner, right? People know that, don't they?
I am a junior party planner, yeah. So if you guys want to contact me for a party, I'd be glad to help plan it.
We'll talk after the segment. All right. As I mentioned, Eric, we always do this thing with you, the tweets of the month, right?
The month, yes. Yeah, I collect tweets. As regular listeners know, I collect tweets, and there's a poll every week on the Tribune website where readers get to vote their favorite tweets up and down. And every month, I select my 10 favorites, and I debut them on the Bill and Wendy show. So
We can't wait. Was this a good month for tweets, would you say?
I would say it's a pretty average month for tweets. There's some good ones. And
right.
I say these top 10 are worth repeating. You'll be repeating them to your friends later on. So.
All right.
So shall I read? They're in no particular order, but I'm going to read them for you now. Is that all right?
I would love that.
And producer Jasmine is going to have a link online that'll take you to where the attribution is. So tell you who wrote them, because some of them I have these unpronounceable Twitter handles, and I'm just going to read the tweets, and if you want to know who wrote them, go online. Okay.
And I want to warn listeners: please hold your applause till all the tweets have been read.
Hold your applause to the end. Right. First one is. I am both a joker and a smoker, but I am not a midnight toker. I have work in the morning.
Enjoyable. Little Steve Miller shout out.
Little Steve Miller shout out. Taking my husband's last name doesn't mean I'm not a feminist. It means I don't want anyone I went to high school with to be able to find me ever again. Live and let live, yes. But if you make an Instagram account for your baby and then write posts as though it's the baby writing them, you should have to go to prison for at least a little bit.
All right. Now, I would substitute dog or cat for baby, because I've seen so many posts that are supposedly written by a dog or cat. And I'm almost positive the dog and cat didn't write those posts.
There's not that much room in our prisons, Bill. That's
right,
the problem with your idea.
No, that's true.
That is a storyline on Orange is the New Black. That's all I'm going to say.
Is it really?
So it is pretty interesting, yeah. Yes.
With a baby or a pet?
A baby.
Yeah. That's very funny.
All right. I'm starting to think my coexist bumper sticker isn't working.
I enjoy that one.
This is a dialogue. 911, what's your emergency? Me. I think a girl gave me a fake number. 911. Oh my God, who answered when you called it? Me. You did.
That's silly.
Eric, can we go back for a second to the coexist one? Because this is still on my mind. Don't you find that people that have that bumper sticker are a very gentle sort of person?
Generally, yes.
Yes.
What I've seen in terms of what I've seen in the work parking lot and the on the street, yes, they're gentle, they're kind people. They're the people who have their "hate has no home here" signs on their front windows.
I know you can't judge people by their bumper sticker, but I know
you absolutely can.
Interesting.
Oh, of course you can.
Although,
you can.
What if, you know, a jerk bought the car from a nice person and left the bumper sticker on?
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
I don't think you would do that, though. That would be the first thing you'd do after you got it home, would be to razor blade off the offensive.
Do you always, as you're passing a car with a specific kind of bumper sticker like the coexist, do you have a preconceived notion of what that person will be like, and you have to look over to see if it matches
100%.
Or not?
Sure.
The one I'm almost always right on is, ask me about my honor roll student. In my head, I'm like, I bet I know what they look like. And as I pass by, I go, yep, nailed it.
I love the, I punched your honor roll student.
I find those honor rolls, I'll bet the kids who are on the honor roll cringe every time they have to get in the car. You just don't want your parents.
Right.
You don't want that, I don't think. I mean, maybe...
I flat out told both my boys, I am not putting this on the car. I will take a picture of it and put it on Facebook.
That's
and
plenty.
I did that. It's not going on the car.
I just think it's funny that bumper sticker almost always says, ask me about my honor roll student, because who would do that? Who would? Hey, roll down your window. Roll down your window. Tell me about your honor roll student.
Tell me about him. Does he get all A's or do you ever get any B's?
My other favorite one, all-time favorite bumper sticker, mean people suck. Like that could draw debate at some point.
Yeah.
Now, I know some mean people that are very nice people.
Yeah, it could be.
All right, go on. I'm sorry.
All
about
right,
that,
here
Eric.
We go.
All right.
I have literally never once felt, quote, up for it later. And I don't know why I keep telling people I'll see if I am.
That's funny.
Good.
I like that one.
Good.
Here's the one that won last week's poll. Guess what? You can think that Trump is a terrible racist person and also think that Joe Walsh is a terrible racist person. It's easy. I'm doing it right now.
I would say put that on the left side of your bumper. Extreme left side of your bumper.
Do you think Karl Marx was a Marxist because of his last name, or was it just a coincidence?
Very funny.
I have a memory like one of those big gray things. You know the ones I mean.
Also very funny. Very good.
And here's, And here's the last one.
All right.
I bought my gym membership at Costco, and I've got 36-pack abs now.
That may be my favorite one.
That's a pretty good one.
That's very, very funny.
That is great.
And I'll be back in the studio with you guys next Monday, I think, to talk about all the stuff in the news. So.
Excellent. We can't wait. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it. Hope you had a great holiday weekend.
Great talking to you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. That's who that is.
What about those stick figure family things, that those decals that are on every car now?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't have one. Don't look at me.
Well,
like
there
that.
Is a Star Wars version, I know, so I'm shocked Jimmy hasn't run that past you.
No.
It won't
he
work.
He would just have a solo. That's all he would have.
Right.
He doesn't want us
just
involved.
Him? All right. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news.
Oh, actually, there is no break.
What?
There is no break. We can go right to news.
We'll go to news, but I do want to tell people that after the news, Jeff Abraham will join us. Jeff has written a very strange book called The Show Won't Go On. The subtitle of the book is The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. I'll be honest with you. I only knew of one of these. Now, these are people, celebrities, that have died while performing. And the only one I knew was a stand-up comic, a man named Dick Shawn, who died years ago during his stand-up act, and nobody did anything because they were positive that he was just making that part of his act. They just let him slump over on stage, and the crowd was laughing, the crowd was enjoying it. They had no idea that he was actually dying. But this is a book filled with these type of stories, so we'll get to that after the news.
And I'll be honest with you, Jasmine runs pitches past us sometimes of things. Hey, would you be interested in doing this?
Yeah.
And she goes, there's this book out where, like, people die on stage while they're performing. And both of our eyes lit up and we're like, yep, let's do that.
In record time. The other one, and I'm sure that because it's a whole book of these, I'm sure it's addressed, is that one night Dick Cavett, remember Dick Cavett had his own talk show for a while? He had somebody on who died while they were a guest on his show, and I was positive that I saw it, but when you and I interviewed Dick Cavett years ago, I told him that, and he said, so many people tell me that, but the reality is we taped it in the afternoon, and we didn't run it. I talked about it on the air. This is Dick Cavett.
Yeah.
But you couldn't have actually seen the clip that night because we didn't run that show. But I was sure that I saw it, but I think I may have just seen a clip, or I remember him talking
about it. No, you didn't even see the clip because it's in the book.
Oh, it is in the book?
It's nutritionist J.I. Rodale. He died of a heart attack during a taping of the Dick Cavett show, but the show never aired.
Interesting. But Dick Cavett did talk about it on the air maybe the next night or something.
Well, yeah, that would be worth talking about, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so that's the part I saw. Yeah, oh yeah, that would come up.
And I thought Tiny Tim...
That he died on stage? I don't know the answer to
or
that.
Or he had a heart attack on stage. I know that it's morbid, and I know, but I'm sorry. This is very interesting to me and to you as well. The show won't go on. We'll talk to you, the author, Jeff Abraham, after the news.
Thank you, Ryan. Still left. It's Wendy Snyder. And our guest is Jeff Abraham. Jeff has co-written a book called The Show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. Jeff, I don't know if you got to hear this while you were on hold, but Wendy just told the story. We okayed you as a guest in record time. We've never had a guest pitch thrown our way that we said yes to faster than you and your book.
I am completely honored, you know, WGN being one of the great flagship stations. I've had many clients on it, so I'm delighted to be on this station.
Excellent.
To talk to you guys, of course.
Excellent. I was only aware, until I saw your book, of one performer, an actor and a comedian named Dick Shawn, who died on stage. Start out with that story. What exactly happened there, Jeff?
It's an amazing story. You know, Dick was an Andy Kaufman-esque performer. You never knew what he was going to do on stage. And the way he opened his show, he was lying under a pillow of newspapers all across the stage, and he would get up. And he would do these long speeches and sometimes drop to his knees. So you never knew what was going to happen in the show. And one night he dropped to his feet and just collapsed. And everyone thought it was part of the show. And his son, Adam, was the stage manager. And he goes, I know this show. He does not drop to his knees at this point in the show. And he goes out on the headset. He goes, he's further back in the house, and says, check if he's breathing. And when a stagehand goes out there, he goes, I kind of think he's breathing, but I'm not sure. He goes, what? So Adam runs out there, and he had a heart attack in mid-performance. And a lot of people thought it was literally part of the show.
That's what I was going to ask you. The story I always heard was is that people in the audience were laughing during this and enjoying it because they believed it was part of the act, but it wasn't that at all. He had died.
Absolutely, and that's the worst thing for a especially a comedian who dies during the in mid-performance. There was another famous comedian named Tommy Cooper. If you Beatles fans will know this, his name, because he's name-checked in Give Peace a Chance. And he was doing a comedy magic bit, and someone said, oh, he's doing a new bit in the act. And then his wife, who was off stage, said, no, he's not. You know, he would not take a fall like that. And he died on stage. And literally people thought it was part of the act. But in Tommy's case, this was captured on live television. And the clip is eerie enough can be seen on YouTube.
I was watching a rock and roll special, and it was a 70th birthday party for this guy, Colonel Bruce Hampton, who I was not that familiar with. He's like this jam band godfather. And he kind of like leaned down and then ended up laying on the floor. And you could see there were a lot of really talented and popular musicians. I can't think of any right now. I want to say like Warren Haynes from the Allman Brothers, maybe John Mayer. People just kept playing and they were kind of looking over to him. But we were watching this concert and then Googling things going, you know, what is that? And people were saying, oh, he lays down sometimes in the middle of his show. So no one went up to him. It turns out he died as well.
Absolutely. People thought he was doing maybe a new Hendrix-type move or something. But you're absolutely right. John Popper from Blues Traveler was definitely there.
John Popper was looking over at him, kind of showing some concern, but like, I don't know, he's done this before. And,
right.
And everybody kept playing. It was the weirdest thing.
Jeff, do you think that because of the excitement factor of performing, maybe your heart's racing a little bit faster, that you might be more prone to dying while performing than not, or is that not the case?
I think it may be. The interesting discovery we made during the book, which I co-wrote with Bert Kearns, was orchestra conductors have one of the most fatal positions ever. You would think, really? Just waving on. But I guess a unhealthy diet, a lifestyle, and waving your arms back and forth for, you know, 2 hours in a concert can give you a heart attack.
I have another performer that I brought up, and I think he's featured in your book. Didn't Tiny Tim drop dead on stage?
Tiny Tim was having health problems. He had a heart attack a month or so before and really was told he should really take about a year off. And he decided to go against a doctor's orders and perform at a women's auxiliary club in Minneapolis. And after performing his set and his trademark last song, Tiptoe Through the Tulips,
yes.
That's easy for you to say, he collapsed.
Yeah.
One of my, I hate to say favorite, but one of the most interesting stories happened in Chicago. Louis Armstrong had passed away, and his second wife, Lil Armstrong, they still had a wonderful relationship. And there was a tribute concert to Louis Armstrong about 7 months later in Chicago. And she was performing at this televised memorial concert for Louis, and she collapsed at the piano and died of a heart attack. And that happened right here in Chicago.
Nobody, Jeff, this is obvious. Nobody wants to die, but isn't there something to be said for dying, doing what you love the most, performing? You kind of get some credit for that, don't you, in a weird way?
I will give you both ends of the spectrum.
All right.
Carl Willenda said, I would rather die on the wire than in bed. Mm-hmm. Nick Willenda did not say that, his grandson. One of the most interesting deaths that most people don't know, Albert Brooks' father was a radio comedian named Parky Carcass.
Sure.
And died at a Friars event. He performed, did a wonderful set, finished, had a heart attack, and he died. And Super Dave, Bob Einstein, was interviewed and said, isn't that great? Your father died doing what he loved. And his answer was, what does your mother do? Oh, is she a housewife? What if someone came into the kitchen while she was making eggs and shot her? Would you say she died doing what she loved?
Wow.
But But Albert is the other extreme. He said, my father, look at him. He didn't die on the way to the theater. He didn't die in mid-joke. He waited until he finished his performance, took his bow, and then died. He said, what's better than that?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Very poetic. I'm sorry. It really is.
Do you include actors? There have been a few actors. The first one that comes to mind is John Eric Hexum, who died while making a television show. Is he included in the book?
You know, we had strict criteria for this book. First of all, we had so many. The original title was The 99 Most Shocking, and the publishers thought, pun intended, it was a little overkill.
Oh.
And then we wanted to really concern with people who literally died on stage, meaning there was an audience. So TV deaths really did not make the book, along with stuntmen and people like that. We're already thinking of a sequel where so many people have died literally on stage, including this weekend and last weekend. There was a Chicago tribute band had a heart attack. So John Eric Hexum,
Brandon
Red Fox,
Lee.
Brandon Lee,
yeah.
Red Fox, the crocodile hunter Steve Irwin was shooting something when he was stung by, I think, a stingray.
Yeah.
But stay tuned for the next book.
All right.
I can't wait. I already can't wait. Bill, you mentioned something about George Carlin and comedy with all the words.
Yeah, there's a bunch of words when you look at the words that describe stand-up comedy. I killed last night. I slayed them. I died. The list goes on and on and on. George Carlin was the one who pointed that out, that there's some correlation between performing and death.
And you worked with George, correct, for the last several years of his life?
I worked with George with the last 11 years of his life and up into his last special. You know, it's funny. Speaking of, you know, George was recording getting ready to do a live HBO special in 2001. It was going to be done live November of 2001, called I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die. And then there was a thing called 9/11.
Yes.
And then George realized, you know, this may not be the best title for a special. So it was retitled, and he wound up revisiting the routine in a slightly altered shape. And then I think it was last year we put out the album, or 2 years ago, that actual performance with that title. But you're right, it is rather ironic, and I was going to say about Albert Brooks' father. He performed that night at that testimonial dinner, and he killed. You know, you really want to be careful when you use those expressions. And there was an English comedian named Sid James who did a lot of the Carry On movies, and someone said he had died in a small town, and when they called the newspaper, he said, everyone dies when they play that theater.
Was it Lou Costello who found out that his son had drowned and then still went on and performed and said years later that that was the best show of his life? He did so well because he needed to not think about his son, so for an hour he didn't think about his son, and it ended up paying off for him, Jeff? Does that make sense?
I'm trying to remember. I apologize. My excuse is, unless somebody died on stage, I'm not an expert. But I for some odd reason, I thought Bud Abbott makes a speech and says something about his partner is not here tonight because of that, or he made a speech, you won't believe what happened to my partner tonight. I don't recall, but he did have that tragedy in his life, and so he may have performed maybe the next day or something. I apologize. I don't have the
exact. That's all right. That's all right. We started to tell the story, and you'll know certainly more about it than Wendy and I do, but Dick Cavett was doing his nightly talk show, and his guest had passed away while shooting the show, right?
I'm glad you didn't say you saw the episode, because Mr. Cavett says about 20 people a year come up to him and said, the look on your face when Rodale died.
J.I. Rodale.
Right. A health expert, as Dick Cavett said, the gods of television were good to me. And he said, well, unless you were in the audience that night, you didn't see the show because it never aired. A very good friend of mine works for Dick Cavett Productions and said to me, if you sell this book, I will allow you to watch this episode. So Bert and I are the first civilians, journalists, who've ever watched that episode. And I will say it is rather eerie to watch a man die on television.
I can imagine.
And Dick when he realized something was going wrong, he was very cautious not to say, "Is there a doctor in the house?" because he was afraid it would have gotten a laugh.
I'm sure it would have. That's so wild.
There were always some misconceptions about that, because when your body makes a sound almost like a snore, that it had always been thought that Dick Cavett said, "Am I boring you?" But that never happened. And Rodale did not say, "I hope to live to 100, and he died.
Oh.
He had been quoted that in a New York Times story that ran about 3 days before. But he did say something rather amusing. Goes, "Well, I don't want to use all my best material." And Cavett said, "Well, don't worry, we'll have you back."
Oh, no.
Jeez.
Jeff, I have to be honest with you. I was under the impression for years that I did see it happen. But when Wendy and I interviewed Dick Cavett, and I started to tell him that, and he said, "No, you couldn't have. It didn't air." But what I think I saw was the next night Dick Cavett coming on and saying what had happened the previous night, but not showing a clip.
Right. He did do a lengthy chat about it at the top of the show the next day. Also, Pete Hamill was the other guest who followed Rodale,
mm-hmm.
and he called the newspaper and gave a very detailed account. And Dick has been talking about this. Why wouldn't you? Because people have been asking him about this for over 45 years. And, I mean, he was on Seth Meyers earlier this year bringing up the incident.
Wow.
So that's why everybody thinks they had heard that, had seen this TV appearance.
Yeah.
Jeff Abraham's on with us, acclaimed pop culture historian and co-author of the show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. And the book was released today. It is available on Amazon.com. I don't know what's happening.
Amazon.com.
What if I die right now in the middle of this interview? Will I be in the sequel?
Don't say that.
Yes, it's available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. We do have some radio personalities have died on stage. Alexander Wolcott, the great newspaper journalist, writer, was not feeling well and slipped a note to his host and said, "I'm not feeling well," and was taken out and had a heart attack and died the next day.
Oh.
And then a gentleman in Chicago, a radio personality named Carlton Cadell, had a heart attack and died on the air. So to answer your question,
I'd be included.
You would be included, but I tell all the people I interview, I promise I will not put you in the sequel, because I would not want to put that pressure on you.
All right. It's just so intriguing. Tell us about Nick Lowe, a musician. He is currently still alive, but something happened.
He was electrocuted, but he managed to survive the electrocution, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you had said a little while ago, Jeff, that we just had an incident this weekend, and we did. There was a performer who died in a fireworks accident on stage. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes. You know, when Kevin Hart was supposed to host the Oscars, if you remember, they went back and checked his Twitter, and they said it was, you know, offensive and all that.
Yeah.
I always say, if they ever check Bert and Mai's emails,
yeah.
I think they
some problems.
It is rather in poor taste. Where I don't want to say we're rooting for people. If you remember, Meatloaf collapsed on stage maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
I think it was Steven Tyler or Joe Perry collapsed on stage, and you know we're sending notes back and forth. Hey, I wonder if he'll make Chapter 7. You know, and you know, not rooting for people, but yeah. Hey, I just heard about a comedian in Bangladesh who just died on stage. Did you hear this?
Mm.
So it's a rather grim reaper correspondence back and forth. But like I said, probably it's about a dozen people of note since we handed in the book. We managed to sneak in the last appendi of the book, a comedian from England named Ian Incognito, who had a heart attack and died on stage.
Yep.
Someone is texting us and wondering if actor Vic Morrow would be included, because technically he was filming, was it the Twilight Zone movie?
Right, yeah. Twilight Zone. And, you know, two things. One, I mean, when doing a book, it's really a celebration of people's lives, and there are so many incidents that are literally tragic. And also, when we interviewed many of these people, we're talking to family members and eyewitnesses, and Adam Sean, who would cry, you know, when recounting these stories. So, I mean, The Twilight Zone is certainly one of the most tragic stories. Again, we didn't include movies. There would have been, I mean, you could literally do a book just about the movies. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
so that will be in the next one. Like John Candy, for example, was shooting a movie, went to sleep, and did not wake up the next day.
Yeah.
We miss him so much, too.
Yeah.
Jeff, this book is just really cool. There are some pictures and just fascinating. A lot more celebrities that we did not mention. The book was released today. You can go to theshowwon'tgoon.com, the website. It's so nice to talk to you, and please keep in touch for your upcoming chapters, unless I'm in it, and then you don't have to worry about talking to me.
I promise I will, and thank you so much for having us here on our debut day. I'm greatly appreciated.
Thanks, Jeff. Good luck with the book.
Thanks so much.
Jeff
Bye-bye.
Abraham. Thank Again, you. The book is called The Show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. Yes, it's grisly and gruesome, but it's very hard to put down. It really is.
Quick break. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Have you had the Popeye's chicken sandwich yet? Because I guess it's still sold out. So much so that an armed group of people rushed the door of a Popeye's chicken restaurant in southeast Houston on Monday night. The sign said sold out. They went through the drive-thru. They said, we don't have any chicken sandwiches. They're banished everywhere. They're going to make more. And they pulled out guns and demanded chicken sandwiches. So Houston police were called to the restaurant on Scott Street and Quarter just after 9 p.m. Employees told ABC 13 a mob of two women, three men, and a baby.
Oh, I saw that movie.
were told at the drive-thru that the chicken sandwiches were sold out, but that apparently triggered the would-be customers. That's when police said they tried to get inside the restaurant. Do they honestly think Popeye's has some in the back and
They're
is hiding it?
They're holding off on them, yeah. They don't want us to know they've got them.
I'm a little concerned about what's in this chicken.
I've had it, and I'm sorry, I have to come clean. It said that it was released on August 12th. We read it right here. I had it in July before we went to L.A., because the boys said that they wanted to try it. I think it was maybe a soft launch.
Oh, maybe.
Because I saw that Popeye's woman in the commercial on TV, and I'm like, oh my God, this is the first time Popeye's actually has a sandwich.
Right.
We need to try it. So yeah. We tried it in July. It was great.
But did you realize when you were eating it that it was going to cause...
it was made of gold? No, I did not realize that.
Do you think they underproduced them to create this?
Yes.
Bill does.
Yes,
he said
I 100%
that.
Do.
Is it better than Wendy's?
Yes. And I know that the spicy chicken nuggets are back at Wendy's, and those are quite tasty, too.
Thanks to Chance the Rapper, by the way.
Yes.
Right.
Well, Chance the Rapper should be getting some of these Popeye's chicken sandwiches made because he would like it better. I'm sorry, it's one of the best.
But people keep saying, even though the stories say that they're sold out everywhere, you can't find them, there's no way you can get them, I keep seeing on Facebook and in news stories that some restaurants do have them, that there's no problem. So how are they deciding who gets them and who doesn't get them?
I think that once their supply is out,
that's it?
Yeah.
They're out.
Got to kill more chickens.
Yeah. Yep.
It's worth it, man. I'm telling you, they're so good. Oh. I'm sorry. They really are. All right. Coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And we'll talk to Steve Bertrand and see what's coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Did you talk about we're going to be going to the stream? 312-235-2525 is the number to call. Write that down. Put it in your favorites. 312-235-2525. Bertrand, what do you have coming up for the Wintrust Business Lunch?
Tim McHenry's going to be here. He's the brains behind Cooper's Hawk. Love Cooper's
You've had
Hawk.
Him on before, right,
yeah,
Steve?
Tim's been on a few times. I'm a big fan of what they've done, and they're expanding further, so we'll talk to him. Also, I don't know if you saw the story in the paper last week about high school football participation in Illinois.
That
going
it's down.
Down 25%. 25% since 2007. We're going to talk to a writer from Axios, Kendall Baker, who's actually talking about high school participation in sports, which is dropping in some areas, but also about there's new competition in football helmets. It's not just Riddle now and Riddell and all of those. There are others coming up with new plans, so we'll kick that around too. All right, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Enjoy your program on the stream.
Thank you, Steve.